This is the Living Legacy Project interview with Victor Shanchuk on January 9th, 2014. And we are sitting at Victor's home, and we're very happy to be here. I'm here with Scott Propiak as well, who's going to be joining us for part of it. Victor, what inspired you to want to pursue a career in the arts?
Well, it started, I guess, with Mr. Gilbert, my fifth grade teacher, who assigned a project, and I developed a series of cartoons that were published in the school paper, and that continued my interest in the arts. I had an art teacher who was also my guidance counselor in grade school, eighth grade teacher, who motivated me to go and apply to the SIA, which is the School of Industrial Art, which is now the School of Art and Design in New York City. In fact, there were three of us that were accepted to that school from PS29, which was very unusual. Gary Slater, Dale Drummond, and myself. SIA was an unusual school in that the freshman and sophomore years were downtown in a 51st Street building. And junior and senior years was classes held in a 77th Street building off of 3rd Avenue. So there was a separation in terms of inexperience and experience, and the major concern in terms of developing your own portfolio and yourself as an individual was during the junior and senior year. It was a very unusual school in that it dealt with illustration and fashion design, as well as cartooning, advertising art, which I majored in. The experience in terms of experiencing the arts or the techniques in the arts were very unusual in that we experienced all of them. And when you think about experiencing an art class today, it's just a general snippet of this and that, where we delved into, let's say, 15 weeks of watercolor, 15 weeks of clay, 15 weeks of drawing the figure, 15 weeks of calligraphy, and so on and so forth, including photography, which as a sophomore motivated my interest in photography. In fact, the teacher said that I should continue and pursue photography, that I had an eye or a sense or an ability that was unique, that he felt was unique. And the funny thing is, what he taught in photo lab in terms of techniques were later techniques that I developed and expanded upon in my own personal work in photography. I had two teachers, my advertising art teacher and my English teacher, Arnold Burgess, and the advertising art teacher, and Mrs. Schwartz, both forced... in a sense, forcing me to apply to Buffalo State, because Buffalo State had a similar kind of program in teaching art, in the art education program. So here I have these two heavyweights, including my mother, saying, you're going to go, take the test, finish your portfolio. So I did finish the portfolio, took the interview for Buff State. And by the way, being in advertising art, I won the Advertising Art Award at graduation at the School of Industrial Art, which was a shocker for me. It kind of opened the door for me to get into Buff State. And Buff State was a school of all schools. It taught life. It taught creativity. It taught spirituality. It was an experience beyond all experiences in education, in terms of faculty, in terms of students and relationships that you built in within the school itself or the classes that you had. And again, it was the same kind of sort of a replication of SIA. You experienced drawing, you experienced photography, you experienced design, you experienced crafts. You experienced painting, you experienced art history. You name it, we had to take it. And it all related to each other in terms of how the faculty taught, because the faculty were constantly communicating between each other. When we took breaks from classes, we'd go down to the basement of Rockwell Hall, which was called the stateroom, like a cafeteria coffee shop. And we'd sit around a table, and the faculty would sit around a table, and they would talk and philosophize, and we would listen and learn and ask questions. And that kind of experience spilled over to Cole's, which was a bar just down the street from the college. Friday evenings, there would be students and faculty, and we'd have a continued learning, whole process and experience of education.
I have to say it's very interesting hearing your perspectives about Buffalo State College at a different point in history. And I want to ask, what years were you at Buffalo State College?
I was at Buffalo State from 1957 to 1961, mm-hmm. which is really the strongest point or time in relation to faculty and the essence and energy of the school itself. It was a vital force in art education. It was the largest art education program in the country. As I was saying before, it taught about life. It taught aesthetics. It taught us to internalize. It taught us to look at life differently and look at things differently and interpret those things through our, shall we say, reconstruction of what we're experiencing mm-hmm. in life. It made us a different person because we looked at things differently. I don't think it's an experience that anyone else could have again in those particular years. Stan Searles organized the faculty and brought all these individuals in that were unique. And as I said earlier, that functioned together, worked together, talked, argued, each having their own sense of spirituality. Reminds me of Wally Green, who I had for art history. He spent an entire semester on one piece of sculpture, and our textbook was the Brahma Gita and the Upanishads, and the sculpture was the creator-destroyer Shiva, the circular one with the flames. He's on the baby. And that taught us a lot and put us in touch with things that we never thought we would experience. Then there was industrial design teacher Victor Papanek, who was an apprentice of Frank Lloyd Wright. Again, he taught us to look at objects differently. He taught us design, industrial design, to evaluate what we come in contact with, a fork, a spoon, a pot, a pan, utilitarian-type objects that we would use that were functional and non-functional. And to this date, I'm still very critical about what I use, how I use it, and how things function. For me, things have to function in a very practical sense. Then there were people like George O'Connell, who taught drawing. What was so funny and unique about my experience with O'Connell and figure drawing was that I went to the Student Art League as a teenager in New York City, and here I was, mid-teen, in high school, drawing the nudes and bring home the drawings, and my father went through the ceiling, that I was doing something dirty, you know, by drawing the nude. But it prepared me for college and for O'Connell's drawing class because I was light years ahead of the students that were there. Which was great because it opened other kinds of doors for me in relation to my experiences and the new experiences that I would be having and also building personal relationships with faculty. Speaking of personal relationships, that's something that developed over the years at Buff State, where on a Sunday afternoon we'd go to Metzger's on the east side with faculty and all sit down and have a chicken dinner. And we'd go to various restaurants and bars occasionally and do the same thing. Or go to George O'Connell was involved in jazz, loved jazz. Or we'd go to a jazz club on the east side. So this faculty-student relationship was a very special kind of experience. Oh, I have to say, one faculty member, Trevor Thomas, who is from England and was also the news critic for the Courier Express, taught at Buffalo State. And here we were at Coles, talking, socializing, and I was listening. I wasn't talking. So Trevor Thomas looks at me and says, "If you have nothing to contribute to this conversation, you can leave." It was like a slap in the face. A ton of bricks hit me. And it changed my whole point of view in terms of those kinds of experiences that we were having with each other. And it did make a difference, make a change in me.
So one of my next questions has to do about your most important influences, mentors, and inspirations. And you're kind of touching on a lot of that as you're talking about your Buffalo State experiences. But branching outside of that into your arts career, who are some people who were influential in helping you define your style or how you wanted to work and create art?
One person would be Roland Wise. I worked independently with Roland for 2 years. As an undergraduate and also as a graduate student. George O'Connell, of course, was an influence on me in terms of drawing. Let me see who else. Experiencing art history was an influence on me. Seeing Seurat and the afternoon on the Grande Jatte in person was a mind blower, an ecstatic experience. Seeing Rothko's work and experiencing his work after he died, there was a memorial at the Martha Jackson, and I walked into the room that had the black and gray and white paintings and burst into tears. Again, another unusual aesthetic experience. Even though I don't paint like Jackson Pollock was an influence. My seeing and looking at things differently. Oh, yes. I worked with Oscar Bailey, photographer, for an entire summer. There was just him and myself in the darkroom working together, which was a hell of an experience. Then, of course, the extended family and friends, Les Crims, was more of a political influence than an artistic influence on me. Wes Olmsted, both political but a spiritual influence. And then friends like Ken Peterson, a sculptor.
Any other photographers?
Not specifically any photographers, because my work didn't stay within the realm of reality and realism. It still does, but I moved into more experimental approaches in photography. Pinhole photography was a big thing for me. Making handmade images, handmade slides, handmade transparencies, without the use of a camera, using dyes and plastics, explored polarization for years and still doing that in photography, creating small miniature collages and then blowing them up and making prints of those pieces, creating unusual animated kind of images. Yes, Scott.
I think that many people think of you as a photographer, but you probably identify more as an artist who uses photography like you would use a colored pencil. You're using it as a tool to realize a visual result. You're not actually just caught up in aperture.
Right.
So that makes you unique for that period as far as somebody who didn't sort of identify based on a medium. A lot of people would say they were a painter or they were a photographer or they were a sculptor, and you sort of tried to realize an artistic object, but you just used all of these different approaches as tools.
It was the creating a new graphic process using photography, images coming from other resources. There was a whole series of images that I did from lifts, where there was a gum surface plastic that I adhered to images, magazine images, and then soaked them and lifted the ink off the surface of the paper. Then I collaged those images and in some cases applied collage material or colored pencil or black and white, just graphite, to the surface of those photographs. And those became very unusual and unique as images. So they were photographic, but somebody else's photo, but I created a collage distortion of those images. There was also a series of photographs, and maybe this is what people recognize me for, other than the handmade colored images, was a series of masks that I had people put on, and I worked in that series for a number of years. Even had children put on these plastic masks and photograph them and then blew those up.
That's like the piece, the self-portrait that's in the Birchfield Penny collection.
That's correct, yes.
Which we have with us here today. We brought one of your works that I'd like you to speak about on video.
Oh, that's a pinhole image.
This is a pinhole image.
A self-portrait with a female mask. The unique thing about that is the camera that I had used, where I had, it was a broken camera, took out the lens and constructed a pinhole cover on the opening and used a popsicle stick as a shutter. So I had set the camera up in the room at City Honor School where I taught and taught photography, and just reached over and moved the popsicle stick and took a picture and closed it, advanced the film, and I was using film at that in my pinhole work, and did a whole series of those. In fact, what I'd like to do is print the entire series and possibly donate them to the Birchfield so that they have the complete lineage of that series. Yeah, pinhole was a big exploration for me also. Again, I always like to delve in these non-photographic approaches to creating images that you can project or print. I don't think there's, in all the experiences I've had with handmade collages, I don't think there's anybody else in the country that's doing what I'm doing in creating those kinds of images and that kind of the color from the distortion that is created with polarization. But the funny thing is, the whole concept of that work started with me working at Bennett High School. We were, just for fun, drawing on film, drawing on 16-millimeter film. And it was a project that one of my student teachers was working on with my students. And we were creating images that moved on film when projected with a 16-millimeter camera. In fact, I still have some of those films. And that motivated me to create other kinds of images in the handmade area of slides. So I was projecting these images and drawing on black film and doing figurative kinds of things or textural kinds of things, even to the point where I was mounting pieces of cloth, woven cloth, and then projecting the cloth. You name it, I kind of did it in putting those kinds of things together. Using them in a group that I was part of, it was MAP, Multi-Art Performers. We were a performance group from late 1979, early 80 through 80. I think our last performance was at the Birchfield in 84 or 85. And it was dance, it was a play, it was music, and it was projections. And the projections were the images that I had created. And the dancers, you know, worked through those images. In fact, there was a series I did using the handmade images that we put together and performed at Hall Walls. They had a big event, and different artists were invited to perform and speak and so on. And we did a performance, and I did the projections, and I created a sound piece. I forgot what piece of music I used, but I repeated it four times on four different tape recorders and played them all out of sync while the dancer danced, and I projected these images on the dancer. And the funny thing is, after we were finished and took our wares, we left, and when we left, half the audience left, which really PO'd quite a few people at Hall Walls and put us in a bad state or bad position. There was one other unusual approach that I used. I used photographic gels, but theatrical gels, and I cut them into strips and mounted them in the slide holders, the plastic slide holders. And as I projected them in this one performance, the dancer had to move from one slot of color to another slot of color and didn't know what was going to be projected on her as we were going through the performance. So it was rather different and very unique. And also another unique thing about the projection of the colored gels, using three different projectors or even two different projectors and overlaying the colors. Once they were projected and overlaid and somebody walked through the colors, it created other kinds of colors behind them. The body sort of acted as a prism, but it was more blocked some of the colors to create other kinds of colors. So my experimentation still continues, creating different kinds of images, different points of view. Looking at the images here, you can see many different things, many different kinds of distortions or images that you want to create for yourself in them. I find a sense of spirituality in the work itself.
I was going to say, it seems that experimentation is the central theme within your work, whether it's, you know, performance or installation or moving image or handmade moving image or photography or painting. It seems like there's a lot of exploration that runs through everything that you do. Do you see a relationship between your background as an art educator and then your career as an art educator? And then in your personal work, there is this large degree of exploration that you keep so active with. Is there any sort of relationship between all these different facets of art and how you sort of move between them all?
Well, what I experienced at Buff State, as well as through the faculty and my own exploration in the arts, I applied to my teaching. What I learned, I taught. My students looked at life very differently because of the kinds of assignments that I gave them. Like in photography, an assignment, why? Drive them nuts. Of course, they were standard kinds of things like reflections, shadow. Shadow was a good one for some students. But I was always challenging the student, both in photography visually as well as the drawing and painting and the studio and art students, to think differently. What changed my point of view in teaching? At Bennett High School, I was there for 10 years. It was more structured, more an Achtung approach because of the nature of the school itself and the students. But going to City Honors, it was a total change of how I viewed myself as well as how I viewed the students and teaching the student. Because we were dealing with students that had problems. That's how City Honors was developed. The problem student that was taken out of the classroom and dealt with on a small basis or a one-to-one basis or a small group basis. So when City Honors moved out of Bennett into School 17 and you had larger classes, you had a group of students that had difficulty in dealing with life. And dealing with life's experiences, or having difficulty at home, and we dealt with kids that had divorce problems and growing problems or drug problems, whatever. I mean, City Honors in the late 70s, early 80s was unique in that a student with a problem could knock on your door, you could be teaching a class, and ask for help, and you'd leave your class and walk around the hall talking to the student while you assigned somebody in the classroom to take over the classroom, or the classroom took over itself. It was a very, very different experience. It was challenging because the kids could not draw. They couldn't paint. They had no concept of what art was all about, and they were thrown into an art classroom with me, and I approached them from a verbal standpoint. In fact, I developed the program Verbal and Visual Thinking, which I also presented to the Humanities Conference in New York State at that time, back in the early 70s. And approaching art from a verbal standpoint improved the visual approach that these students had. It created a visual understanding through verbal. It was exploratory, and it worked. Going back to that why concept, in one class I would sit students in a circle, and I'd sit in the middle, and I'd start the class by saying, why? And the students just sat there looking at me as if I was an idiot and somebody that should be in the state hospital. But it took a while, but the students got involved in the whole concept and understanding the concept. And then as soon as they could understand the concept verbally, they could apply it visually. And that was the success of the program at City Honors.
And City Honors then grew to be a school that everybody wanted their kids to go to, not just...
That's true.
How did that happen? How did it go from sort of kids that needed a bit more attention to kids...
with the high achievement ability and so on.
Was it because of the focus on the individual, do you think?
And also the development of the program, the classes. The classes became more intense. The achievement of the students was recognized. I mean, they were getting into Ivy League schools and colleges that nobody else in the city was getting into. And we were still small as a school when we first moved to the Fosdick-Maston building. We were about 400 kids and a faculty of 40, 50. But the faculty itself was unique because we were sort of like all on the same page.
You were a team that really built the school, right?
That's correct. That's correct. In fact, I was initially part of the team from the art standpoint, from the visual arts. And that's where I developed my photo program, which became a challenge for every other photo program in the area. Because anytime we entered the Keenan Center photo competition, we won. I mean, I think we won best school 5 years in a row, photographically. And again, because of the experimental approach and the assignments that I gave, there were very many students that came out with unique points of view to creating art and life. Some ended up in the arts, some in photography, some in art history, some in fashion, some in architectural design. High achievers because of the experiences that they had. And, you know, building a kind of inner spirit and creating, I don't know what you would call it, like a putty that filled the gaps in their life, mm-hmm. You know. Art became, to many students at City Honors, sanctuary. There were students that lived in the art room. It was the same at Bennett High School for some reason. I don't know what unique thing that they saw, but they saw comfort, they saw protection, they saw understanding. It was a way of shaping their life, you know, through aesthetics, through the arts. Well, one thing that I did use in my teaching was the inquiry process, mm-hmm. Looking at things from a sensory point of view, from an affective point of view, an emotional point of view, and from the brain, the mental approach. Applying those things, you know, to the artworks, but also to life, building a sense of diversity and focus on that the individual can create in their own life. You know, it's funny, our new director came, Tony Bannon. He asked us all to write something about ourselves in terms of what kind of force we were. And I'd like to read what I had written. It's the action of my soul. I am a force, a momentum, the aesthetic that is shaping the choices in personal values and experiences in life. I am change, the changer, the action, a vital force, an animating force, a person of action, experimenter, inspiring spirit that fills the gaps in the life of the Birchfield Penny Art Center and my own. My action, my soul, is the embodiment, essence, epitome, personification, and quintessence of the art experience in art education and in life. You know, one thing we were supposed to write about our individual goals at the Birchfield and self-improvement. And one thing I did write in relation to that was to listen better, to do and realize the truth, build a better spiritual foundation. For without a spiritual foundation, there is destruction. And of course, my phrase that I developed years and years ago, art is life and life is art. That is my phrase that I have been dealing with for years and years and years since the 60s. You know, I look at the arts as a life force, a momentum that has an aesthetic that binds us. It shapes our choices and creates, well, it shapes our choices in personal values and choices in life. Art has, in education, has a spirit, an energy, a life, a vital force, an essence. I feel it's an essential part of life. It's a driving force for students as well as artists.
I want to talk a little bit about some other projects you've been involved with as an artist in Western New York, such as maybe your time with the Artist Gallery, which is...
Yes.
Is that where you met Wes Olmsted, or did you know him before that?
We feared Wes Olmsted before that. That was... I took over in 85, director, chairman of the board, whatever you want to call it, and I was there for 5 years. We had some very, very unique exhibitions. But prior to that, I was involved in the Artist Gallery through exhibitions. One unique exhibition which exposed me to Dennis Maloney, a poet and publisher, where artists were invited to by the poets to create an artwork to go with the poetry. It was an exhibition that was put together at the Artist Gallery, which was fantastic. I want to say mind-blowing in many aspects of just the word as well as the image. That was my first experience with the Artist Gallery. And getting involved with the Artist Gallery and the board and the people, and which became also part of my life and extended family. And we still meet and still come together on many, many occasions during the year. But the Artist Gallery, what a pain trying to keep that thing above board. I was the last person to write a grant for the NEA to get money for the Artist Gallery back in 85. We also got New York State Council grant, and I was able to use that money and survive for almost 4 years. We had many, many unique exhibitions. We had Paul Sharratt's, his new work. We had Tony Conrad. Tony Conrad did the most unique thing at the Artist Gallery. He created an entire apartment environment. He took the entire space and created walls, moved in furniture, and so on, so that you moved from one room to the next room to the next room, and so on. That was amazing. That was one of the far-out exhibitions we had. Another unique exhibition was several artists stapled themselves to the wall and just hung there for the entire exhibition.
How long did the exhibition go for?
Well, the opening was from like 7:30, 8 o'clock until 11. We also had a guy hanging from ropes in the middle of the gallery. It was fun trying to put together a lot of the exhibition. In fact, I got to get all of my slides together from the Artist Gallery and get them over to the Birchfield.
You know, I think, and maybe this is what you're saying throughout all of this, is that this link between identifying as an artist, artwork in general, and community, and that all of these things mm-hmm. are connected. And, you know, in that way, you were, aside from being an educator and an artist, you were connected to so many arts organizations. I mean, obviously, the Birchfield, but an artist gallery, but, you know, how many different arts organizations do you think you worked with over the years? It seems like almost every involvement in almost every gallery that was in Buffalo from the late 50s on.
I was an installer and curator for the AAO Gallery. That was a gallery on Main Street underneath the hall walls in SEPA when they moved from the Essex Street site. Created the first, so we call it, national photo show that was curated by Les Grimms. We did several craft shows, national craft shows, that came into Buffalo through the AAO Gallery. Again, we were people that were ahead of our time, and this was all after the Artist Gallery. And the Artist Gallery was dealing with emerging artists that couldn't find spaces for exhibitions. And AAO was sort of the same thing. It was more or less an arts organization with a group of artists were members and supported the gallery. And then we got involved with the Buffalo Society of Artists. Then that was due to Shirley Kasman. So I was involved with them since, I think, 1984. I was one of the few I also did crafts on the side. So I was one of the few artists that was involved in the Buffalo Craftsman from the mid-70s through to the mid-80s. We had exhibitions at the Theodore Roosevelt site. In fact, we had a store and an exhibition hall at the room at the Theodore Roosevelt site. We got people like Sylvia Rosen, that was a member of the Buffalo Craftsman, Wilhelmina Godfrey, Carol Townsend, you name it, they people were there.
Well, you were very active with Art Park.
Yes.
And you were active with them in cooking arts and all sorts of different...
I did three stints at Art Park. One was a major stint for pinhole photography, again. Where I got involved with artists, where I got them... motivated them to cook, because I cooked a lot. So I would cook a meal and once a week, and then they would cook on a rotating basis. But when I cooked for art. Mm-hmm. So when I cooked a meal, I got a piece of artwork from the people that were at Art Park. Because I came to Art Park even after my residency and continued to cook for the entire summer.
And that became quite a theme, the cooking workshops. Mm-hmm. Over the years,
yes.
At Art Park. What year did you do a residency at Art Park?
92? I think it was 92.
One of the last.
Yeah, it was close to the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they continued with the program for another 2 years after that. I also did a residency for cooking. It was called Chili Up, Chili Down. that was held on the loft, so I was there for a week cooking mm-hmm. for the general public.
Well, we
and for the artists.
The Birchfield Penny has received the Eyes of Art Park.
Yes, I've heard.
And so as I continue processing those, I'll keep an eye out for you.
I don't know what files you have, whether you got Joan McDonough's files or not, but there were a lot of photographic images that I had created and made that should be part of the archives. If they're not, I'll have to make some and get some to you.
I'll be posted. We have about 80,000 images to go through, but we're plugging away at it.
Yeah. Great. Plus.
But Art Park really, in a lot of ways, sort of operated from a similar approach that you have to art making and in encouraging people to make artwork. It was very
That's
open and sort
correct.
Of about exploring creativity as much as...
Yes, and working together
mm-hmm.
and spending time together. It kind of goes back to the student and the teacher at Buff State when I was a student. We would hang together and not go off campus or off Art Park because they had cabins, and I decided to, in my residency, to stay there, to live there. So I was living with the artists for a week. We were living with each other, cooking for each other. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Which, now that we're talking about organizations that you've been involved with... Do you want to talk a little bit about your time with the Birchfield Penny Art Center?
Well, I've been involved with the Birchfield Penny Art Center for this past summer, which makes 13 years. And it's funny, the story, and how I became involved with the center. I say it started with a Q-tip. I walked into the partial installation of the Frank Lloyd Wright Windows exhibition at the Birchfield. I was being trained as a docent. I had photographs that I had taken of the building of the Frank Lloyd Wright Martin House in 1959, and they became part of the exhibition in a supplemental room, which I was very pleased and very honored to be part of. But I walked into the exhibition, two things got me. Number one, nobody was documenting the exhibition. Photographing the installation. So I got involved with taking photographs, prints, as well as slides. But then at a closer look, I found that the windows were dirty. And I said, hey, we got to get these windows clean. And we got the art restoration people from downstairs to come upstairs and check out the windows and evaluate how we would operate in terms of cleaning the windows. They did an extensive evaluation of how we would do it, and we used cotton swabs and Q-tips. And once you started cleaning the Tree of Life windows that were in the house or in the exhibition, you got all kinds of black muck and so on the Q-tip, and we were using distilled water. So I got a team of people to work with me, students as well as adults from the BSA, and we managed to clean everything before the exhibition opened.
I can't remember exactly, so I might be off on this, but you know, I was the registrar at the time, and we had to do condition reports on the windows, and I want to say that the Tree of Life windows consisted of 480 panes, little tiny panes of glass.
Yes.
Per window, and there were over 70 windows in the exhibition. So it wasn't just a cleaning a window here or there with a Windex and a paper towel. It was...
Oh, but talk about Windex and paper towels. I asked some of the people when they first got the windows how they took care of them, and some of the women who will remain unnamed said that they cleaned the windows with Windex. And that's like putting... acid on the surface of the metal, the came, the brass that was used to hold the glass together. We resolved the issue and corrected everything that had to be corrected, and it was very successful. It was quite an experience. Another experience about that particular exhibition was the installation at Bogorata. Bill mentioned Scott Propiak and myself were the people that took the exhibition down to the gallery. We had to lay out the show, we had to build all the pipes, and then install the glass works, just the three of us.
We were there for 3 weeks, I think, maybe?
Two weeks.
The three of us built an installation that required 12 people to put together in Buffalo when we first installed it.
That's right.
Never say that magic can't happen at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center.
And the funny thing is... I still was cleaning a window with a Q-tip, the last window that was part of the exhibition. And in fact, it was the window that was in the collection of the Albright Knox Art Gallery. What was unique about the cleaning of the windows, the Buffalo News had come out here in the city to the Birchfield, took a picture of me through the windows, cleaning the windows. So that was on a page in color in the Buffalo paper. Go down to Bogorata, what the hell happens? Me cleaning a window. Another photograph in color. So I'm synonymous with Q-tips and the Birch and the Doran Martin windows. Some of the unique things and unique experiences I've had at the Birchfield was curating exhibitions or being allowed to curate an exhibition or co-curate an exhibition.
You volunteered close to 40 hours a week there from...
Oh, occasionally.
Yeah.
It depended on what was happening at the time. Yeah. I've curated Milton Rogovin exhibitions. I've gotten really quite involved with the whole Milton Rogovin thing because I did write an essay about his work in Appalachia. I'm currently working on what I call the Milton Rogovin aesthetic. No one has ever written anything about Milton and his aesthetic approach or a point of view. He claimed that he never had an aesthetic point of view. I was fortunate enough in 2002 to go on a photo shoot. He called me to assist him set up and take some images on the Lower West Side, which I did. So I saw him in action. I saw him in working. I saw his wife, Anne, work with him. And so it opened some secret doors for me in viewing the man at work, which I won't discuss now, but it was quite a unique experience.
What year was that?
They say 2002. He was finishing a quartet.
So you were on his... You went on his very... His last...
His last... It was his last photo shoot. Then also curating and working on the Adele Cohen exhibition, which was phenomenal experience, working with Ben Perrone and Don Matz and Scott. Then there was the one exhibition I really enjoyed working on was the Les... I want to say Les Grimm's. Maybe Les Grimm should have an exhibition.
Well,
Was Wes Olmsted, who was a good friend of mine, and I've known him for years. And the exhibition became a religious experience as well as an art experience. And putting that together was outrageous. Trying to think of other things. Oh, yes, of course. The cartoon exhibition.
Oh, Tom Tolles.
Tom Tolles. Trying to think of this. Well, there are so many.
You worked on Art on Wheels. You worked on...
Art on Wheels.
Buffalo. You worked on...
Yes.
You worked on multiple Rogovin exhibitions.
yeah, over the years. Mm. Yeah, created two cars for Hard on Wheels and the Heard About Buffalo. In fact, I painted the buffalo right in this room, in the dining room. It was a life-size buffalo. The funny thing is, when they moved it in, clearance was 1 inch on each side of the doorway.
That is exactly what I was thinking right now. I'm like, how did they get it in here?
In fact, there's still paint marks. Yeah, that was a wonderful experience.
When did you retire from teaching?
I did early retirement in 1997.
Okay. I thought it was a little bit before you started working with us at the Birchfield, but I didn't know how much.
I was working at part-time at Juville College. I just finished my 20th year at part-time at Juville College, teaching art history, architectural history, history of Western art, history of modern art, history of visual history of American art, history of American architecture and Frank Lloyd Wright. And then a few years ago, we developed a course called Art of Anatomy, where I'm working with the Gross Anatomy professor in the clinic and teaching drawing to students, non-art students, that are taking arts, liberal arts credit as well as biology credit for Art of Anatomy, where we're working from cadavers. So I'm teaching the drawing techniques and they're drawing. We're the only school in the region, in this part of the country, that's doing it. I don't know if there anybody in New York State City is doing any of the colleges there, but no other college that I know of has that program.
It seems like core principles, like in teaching art, that a lot of places don't teach anymore. Like drawing the figure from life is something that, yeah, you know, I know that people do that with models, but not with cadavers in that way, not in that sort of medical science way. I think that people, you know, and teaching principles, teaching drawing, teaching, sure, color, teaching, happening less and less.
Todd Stevens is the professor I work with at Juville. He teaches the biology.
I'm on
leave right now.
Your impact into the arts in Western New York is so broad and far-reaching.
Well, I haven't mentioned where else I've taught. I taught at Villa Maria Photography for 4 or 5 years. I also took over Vince Arnone's job at the Albright Knox Art Gallery and taught there for 5 years in the art program that they decimated because they wanted, quote, artists to teach the classes and not professionals, which really hurt them and hurt their program. That was back in 1985. And I also taught at Buff State for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Lost my position because of politics, political cutbacks. Yeah, I've been around for quite a while. If you put all the years separately, if you count all the years in terms of teaching, I think it goes somewhere between 73 and 76 years of teaching.
That's just teaching.
That's just teaching.
Well, I know that I run into students of yours all the time, and they brag about what it was like taking classes with you, whether it was City Honors or at one of the colleges.
And what do they say?
They say that you're the art teacher that had the most influence on them in their entire art careers, and that's people who are now going on to have commercial art success, or they're teaching at universities and colleges around the U.S. They always remember Mr. Sanchuk.
Yeah. That's great to hear.
I think the last question I have for this interview, I often ask this one of two ways, depending on which resonates more for you, but what advice do you have for emerging artists? Or maybe another way to think about it is, specifically for you, maybe what advice would you have for some of your art students as they would be graduating and going on to pursue a career in the arts, wanting to build a career as an artist themselves?
Well, I wrote a statement before you guys came this morning. It deals sort of with what you're asking, sort of advice to those people. Art is not a copy of reality. One must know the vision, or the object, or the concept, and focus on the object. Become one with the object, become one with the concept. Then comes transformation, reconstruction, reorganization, and an understanding of the concept through the elements and principles of design. It becomes an interior aesthetic action which moves the individual artist to create a new object, a new concept, a new art, a new reality. When they were cutting the arts at City Hall, I really got involved and wanted to come go down there and say something. And that same thing occurred back in the 70s, and I did speak to the Board of Education then, and I said, "Are we at war with the arts?" And that was the headline of an article in the paper about that conflict. Let me just read this.
Please.
Because it deals with education. In my 50 years plus of teaching the visual arts and art education, I found the visual and music education are limitless in its influence in the general education upon math, science, English, history, physical education, the creative process of inquiry, sensory, cognitive, and effective ways of learning. The arts fill the gaps in life. Art reflects us. The arts are a force, a momentum, and the aesthetic that binds us. The arts are shaping our choices in our personal values and choices in life. The arts in education has a spirit, an energy, a vital force, an essence. It's an essential part of life, a driving force for the student. The arts, as inspiration, creates a conduct of behavior and respect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Victor, for taking the time to talk with us today and for participating in the Living Legacy Project, because the Birchfield Penny and Western New York would not have been the same without you.
Thank you.